Hello and welcome back to the Missing Manual podcast. Zach and Connor here, and we're kicking down the door of 2023 with the first of many spicy game discussions to be had this year. With our Outlast mini-series in the rearview mirror and the imminent arrival of the Dead Space remake, we thought this would be the ideal time to turn our attention to that beloved series that set itself apart in the sea of other survival horror games. In part one, we'll be looking to discuss a little bit about the studio that brought us the masterpiece, as well as our impressions of the first game. So be sure to sync up your rig and be ready with your trusty plasma cutter, because we're about to crack this sucker wide open.
Hello, 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 fine folks, and welcome back to the first episode of the Missing Manual podcast in 2023. We made it. We survived another year, Zach.
We made it, buddy.
Woo! We're here!
Yeah. For all that's worth, we're here.
We're back. And to be fair, just to pretense this is not only going to be a really good series, but this whole year is going to be really good because games this year are going to pop off. There are some absolute bangers that we have to look forward to this year, some incredible games. And as Zach so rightly said in the intro to this episode, the remake of the very first Dead Space game is finally dropping at the end of this month.
Mate, I'm very excited. It's going to be great.
It's come around so fast. It's come around so fast, you know. It doesn't seem like it was long ago that we first chatted about this.
No, it was one of the many newsreel episodes, wasn't it? Where we kind of discussed it when it was announced, and we were like, "Man, it's so far away! Like, it's going to be really cool, but we've got a long time to wait."
It seems like a lifetime away.
Yeah, and then last year was just the constant ramp up, and the bar was just set higher and higher with all of these announcements and bits and pieces like that. So
not only the year of the horror game, but the year of the horror game remake, right? We've got Dead Space coming out, we've got Resi 4 coming out, we've got hopefully Silent Hill 2 coming out. No actual announced date on that, but let's hope it's this year, fingers crossed.
That would be cool, but again, like I can totally see them maybe making it next year. Potential.
The trailer obviously looked quite good, but we don't know how long it's been going, to be fair, in the background. It's probably been going for a fair amount of time, I imagine. We'll fingers crossed for that one. If we do, that'd be the trifecta of survival horror this year.
That would be amazing. I think Alone in the Dark comes out this year as well. So
That one as well. Another remake to add to the list.
There's literally a metric shit ton.
It's a good year for horror. Again.
And what we wanted to make sure that we did is that we went back and we kind of discussed the origin of these horror games. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to do that with the other ones.
Go back and discuss some
of the older games before that'd they be come tasty. Out. So we wanted to start here. This was obviously the first one to come out this year, and it's one that we've had on the back burner. We've been thinking about doing an episode for this for a long time.
So long, right?
It feels so good to be able to finally pull the trigger on this.
It does. This is something we've been talking about for quite a long time, since the inception of the show. Really, we've been discussing Dead Space here and there, and Dead Space obviously is a series that's very near and dear to us. Absolutely love Dead Space. Is one of my favorite games of that era when it came out, the PS3, Xbox 360 era. Dead Space 1 was an absolute banger of a game. Corker, proper good.
Yeah, that's it, you know. And while we can, we'll go into the kind of the reasons why it kind of seems to have taken inspiration from certain places. It definitely set that bar, and it kind of made it its own. There's definitely bits and pieces here and there that you can take from films, games, etc. But Dead Space really does feel like it has its own pocket in the market. You know, I wouldn't say that there are too many other games that are on its level, my opinion.
Not really. No, I would be inclined to agree with you there. And even Wikipedia actually states it is one of, you know, rated as one of the greatest video games ever made by multiple industries. So. You know, that's high hopes, right? And high praise. And to be fair, I have to agree. Dead Space, the first game, was fantastic. It was really, really good, you know. But kicking things off, let's have a little chat about Visceral Games, shall we? Or technically, at this point in their history, they weren't known as Visceral Games. They were known as EA Redwood Shores. That was their OG name.
Yeah, and they were founded originally in 1998, and they've had many games with their names credited upon it.
They have a huge pedigree for when they first started in the industry. This is, you know, way before the time of them being known as Visceral Games, way before the time of Dead Space. They originally started, like I said, in 1998, and their first ever game was a game called Future Cop LAPD. and this game is actually kind of interesting, though. I'm not going to lie to you. It was released in 1998 on PC, Mac, and the PlayStation 1. You basically were like a mecha pilot. you're like a mecha pilot in like a in a mech in like a futuristic like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Solving crime and whatnot. But what was really interesting about this game, just to touch on here, is that it had like MOBA-like elements, so sort of like League of Legends and Dota and that kind of thing. But it actually predated the original Warcraft 3 by quite a lot. So technically, this was one of the very first MOBA games ever made.
That's kind of mad, really.
It's interesting, because a lot of people think Warcraft 3 and Dota obviously came from Warcraft 3, and that's kind of what began the MOBA movement. And to be, in actual fact, it was, right? It's what popularized MOBAs as a genre of game. But this game actually came out, you know, a little bit before that, and it had an online as well. So technically, it was the first competitive Dota-esque game that came out, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, and like the idea has to start somewhere, right? The first idea might not always be the most popular, but
exactly, it was the inception. But to be honest, their games after that obviously would, you know, couldn't be further at all, because from then on they moved primarily to consoles only, which they made a whole bunch of games. They started making a lot of sports games. They made a lot of Tiger Woods games.
Oh my god, so many Tiger Woods games!
A lot of Tiger Woods games, all the way up till Tiger Woods 2007 was their last credited one. You know, so that's only a year before 2008 comes and Dead Space comes out. So they were doing quite a lot that wasn't related to, you know, Dead Space in the background, and they were still, you know, I guess keeping the studio alive and funding it with making all these other games. Some of the more famous examples that you might have heard of, they did a ton of the James Bond games. So if you ever played the James Bond games, you
may have Agent Under Fire, From Russia With Love. I had both of those. They were both good games.
Pretty decent, actually, as well. They were also responsible for the fantastic, incredible, we covered it during the PS2 series, the Return of the King Lord of Rings game.
That was great. And the Third Age as well.
Yeah, and the Third Age, yeah, that was them. They did that, which is fantastic, because honestly, that game is incredible. And they also did The Sims 2 for console as well. So if you ever played The Sims 2 back in the day on console, they did that too.
Yeah, back when The Sims was kind of like its own entity on console. Like the console and PC versions were so different.
They were so far apart. It was so different.
You can kind of understand why now, because it's, you know, a different sect of EA altogether.
It was, yeah, a totally different team that was doing it. So around 2008, finally, we had the release of Dead Space. But let's go back and let's talk a little bit about what actually is Dead Space.
So Dead Space is a sci-fi horror game, for want of a better term, third-person shooter. So obviously over the shoulder. The setting of it, I think, is pretty grim. It's very grim dark in places, I think, in certain regards.
It's a pretty depressing game, to be fair.
This isn't a, you know, a happy future for humanity. It's pretty grim. It's pretty, I'd say it's not a universe you'd want to live in. So the game itself is actually set in the 26th century. So humankind has spread out over the stars over the last few hundred years in an effort to colonize and harvest planets for their resources. Basically, Earth has been drained dry of all natural resource, so humanity has had to, be out of necessity, go stretch out to the stars to try and keep humanity alive. The premise of it is that there are these, well, there's a company called the CEC, the Concordance Extraction Corporation, and they're a deep space mining corporation that's basically commissioned ships to go out to mine planets.
But when we talk about mining planets, right, Zach, we're not talking about just going down there, right, and setting like a strip mine, are we? We're talking about completely busting this planet open.
Yeah, so they're not down there with pickaxes. They will actually pull a chunk of rock completely off the face of the planet. It's called Planet Kraken. So the ship that the game is based primarily upon is called the USG Ishimura. Now, that is a Planet Cracker class starship, and like you've said, it's literally used to break planets
to
apart,
crack in planets order, open, right?
Yeah, in order to mine the precious resources within.
It's an interesting look at the future take on that, because obviously, like in a lot of the post-apocalyptic futurism games, right, a common trope in them is the fact that, you know, Earth has no resources left, and ergo, people have to go out and find more resources, right, in other planets. But what I like more, I think, about this design is that it sort of speaks to the nature of the humans in this world and how insatiable their need for resources are, right? That they won't just go to a planet, colonize it, and kind of mine it traditionally like we've done with our own planet. They are physically, they require so much resource, they will crack the planet in half, literally, you know? to get the resource from it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a complete wanton disregard for the rest of the planets in the solar system. It's just a, you know, you're absolutely right. It's that insatiable greed that humanity has. And you can guarantee that there are plenty of bodies that are making a lot of money off of this planet cracking thing, you know, because they can. What I find most remarkable about it is that they are still able to colonize the surface of the planet. Now, I thought, you know, if you take that much of a chunk out of a planet, surely it's gonna flop off of its axis. And
it is like, I don't think it's pleasant to be Vevo as it's happened, because I know the spin-offs, so we won't go too much into the spin-offs, but there is a few spin-off games for Dead Space, one of them called Extraction, which is, I don't know if you've ever played it. Have you played Extraction, my man?
I've not played Extraction, no.
No, so Extraction is a very strange rail shooter game for Dead Space. And it originally came out on the Wii. It came out after the game released, obviously. And it was essentially your standard rail shooter, but it used the Wii remotes, and you played as another character who appeared. You was on the Ishimura at the time it happened. But there's a little bit where you're on the colony, the mining colony on the planet.
Yeah.
And like after, obviously, the crack happens, right? The planet itself is not stable at all, right? It's a fucking shithole. So you don't really want to stay there very long after it's done. But it's an interesting game, actually, Extraction, because I'm going to say that a lot, I think, throughout this series, but Dead Space had a lot of side things, basically, that were originally kind of floating in the void. But when you put it all together, it forms quite a cohesive storyline that connects together. And something they've already said they're going to do for the new game, which I'm really looking forward to, is they're going to introduce more characters from those back into the main game, basically. Because there was characters in Extraction that existed on the Ishimura and did things on the Ishimura, which had an impact on Isaac's time on the ship. And also the anime films as well are going to have an impact on that as well.
Yes.
Because so the anime films weren't touched in the game either.
No, that's it. Like, so I've seen the animes, and I've also, there was a mini comic series that they did, like animated comics, that kind of explained a lot of the background of the Ishimura and obviously the events that happen on the lead up to Isaac, the main character, making it onto the ship, but also the things that followed on after the story of the first one as well, and it links into the sequel. So I think very much in the same way that we mentioned with the Outlast games, there's kind of external media there that kind of threads the needle and ties in those kind of plot holes that
you're 100% correct there, man.
That you don't get answers for in the game.
There's a lot of extra stuff. The film, for example, the first film called Dead Space Downfall, also released in 2008. Really good, by the way, Dead Space Downfall is. Highly recommend. And that is a very interesting anime film because it is actually a prequel to the first game, which is really good. And it takes place after the comic series as well, but obviously before the main game begins. And Downfall is actually, I think, really, really integral to the plot because it sort of fleshes out why humanity obviously needs the resources, you know, why they're cracking planets in the first place, how it kind of expands on how planet cracking is like a bit more of an interesting kind of concept for them. And it also introduces some key characters and some key events as well, which I think give you a lot more grounding in the first game if you watch it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, you can, again, like with most games, you can pick up a lot of snippets via text logs and video recordings that you can find throughout the game through collectibles. But yeah, like there's an absolute wellspring of information that you can pick up from those external medias. So like if for whatever reason you've never actually played Dead Space, like I would highly recommend you go and you know search every nook and cranny and watch those extra bits and pieces, because that will make so much of a difference when you're investing yourself within the universe, for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it adds so much more credence and life to it. But this is why I think the remake is going to do a good job, because they're obviously, they've already said, right, they're going to integrate bits from that side game and from the film into this game. So they're going to match it up, the plot, a little bit closer, which I think is quite a good move.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because initially I just thought it was going to be a bit of a gameplay overhaul and an obvious graphic overhaul. But it looks like they've really taken time to break it down to its core elements, and then they're kind of building it back up from the ground as they go.
They've done quite a lot here. Not only, obviously, is it being made in a Frostbite engine, right, which is EA's proprietary engine, using a lot of their games, Star Wars Battlefront 2, for example, all the Battlefield games use Frostbite. It's a very good-looking, very pretty engine. So not only is it, you know, going to be made in that again, it's going to feature a lot of the original. It's going to feature some redesigned stuff as well. But what's quite interesting is they've taken a lot, obviously, from the game, the old game, and also stuff from the old game that they've made it in as well. And they're going to integrate that into the game now as well. So this is going to be a more complete Dead Space experience.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's not just a case of kind of repackaging something that you've already played, slapping a $50 price tag on it and saying, there you go. Like, at least there is actual, there's going to be some new content for you to discover within the game. So
it seems like they're actually planning a lot of stuff into this, which is really good. They're not just kind of, you know, making it look nicer. They're going to make it play nicer. They've obviously added voice acting in this one as well. That's a big point about the first game, obviously, is that Isaac doesn't speak, does he, in the first game?
No, he's a silent protagonist. Obviously, you still get his pained screams as if he gets hit or, you know, things like that, but he doesn't say a word the whole way through the game.
No. He mostly chills. He doesn't say a lot, really. Which is quite funny, considering the storyline of Dead Space 1 and how fucking traumatizing it is.
Honestly, it's
almost, Isaac as a person.
It's almost like he's catatonic before he even makes it onto the Ishimura, really, isn't it?
It's like he's already hit with shock, to be fair, you know, just going there. And to be fair, you are as well when you play through Dead Space, because I think the plot of Dead Space 1 is pretty soul-destroying in that there's a lot of... the game gives you a lot of hope, and then it takes the hope away from you.
You know? Yeah, definitely. Like, it is, it's a series of unfortunate events, really, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's just from one shit pile to the next, it seems, for our kind of our protagonist here. And again, like, the game is quite long as well. You know, I think
decent length game. Yeah,
it's a decent amount of playtime on there, especially if you are, because again, there are. It's not free roam, but you do get because the Ishimura is quite big. Some of the environments you get to go into, you can kind of choose which order you do things in.
There's about 12 chapters in total for the game, but the chapters are, that doesn't obviously sound like a lot when you say it, but the chapters themselves are quite big.
They're quite meaty, and chapters will take place in certain parts of the ship, and you will also revisit certain parts later on as well.
Yeah, you'll go back through places.
The ongoing damage of the situation and so on and so forth as you do that as well. So I think that's one thing I really, really like about the original Dead Space, is that kind of that the environment kind of changes in and around the story, not in the same way that, like, you know, the choices matter jargon, right? But it's like a, you can see the Ishimura kind of evolving with your character as you go through the game. You know, things are getting progressively worse, and the wear and tear is definitely starting to show in the environment around you.
Oh yeah. The way the Ishimura changes over the course of the game is really good, because in actual, like, kind of hour terms, like, the actual, it's not a very long game from, like, Isaac's perspective. Like, the game, the actual storyline takes place over, like, you know, I don't know how many hours it is, but it's not like, we're not talking a long time here, is it, technically?
No, I don't even think a day passes.
No, it might not even be a day that actually passes in the world. But it is literally like the day from hell.
yeah. Like, take all of the worst things and chuck it into the space of, I don't know, six or 7 hours. This man has lived more life than all of us put together. So
exactly. What is really interesting, though, we might pick this up a bit later. I don't know. It depends. But the origins of Dead Space, rather interestingly, when it was first pitched to EA, it was actually pitched way back in 2006. And the team that behind it were given 3 months basically to produce a prototype in order to get that prototype approved for development. And the original working title of the game was called Rancid Moon.
Rancid Moon.
Rancid Moon was the original working title of the game. And that actually was a game that had a few things that were very different about the Dead Space we know now. And whether you believe the rumors and the theories or not, a lot of that stuff you can find now in the Callisto Protocol.
That's kind of wild.
A little bit of a drop there. A lot of the Waver kind of necromorphs and what they kind of turned into originally were very different in the original Rancid Moon concept. And a lot of that stuff, they claim, was actually, you know, what made it into Callisto Protocol, because Callisto Protocol was made up from a lot of devs that made Dead Space originally. They claim, Glenn Schofield, for example, one of the head guys behind it, he claims that that is pretty much like a lot of the stuff they cut from it, basically, was what came into Callisto Protocol. So that's kind of interesting. I've still not played Callisto Protocol, rather embarrassingly, I will admit. But yeah, it's interesting to see that they've kind of come back and they've made what effectively could be called Dead Space 4, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
In everything but name.
I've had a little whirly gig with Callisto Protocol. I haven't made it very far into it, but yeah, like it's different.
Yeah,
it's different. Like you can definitely see where the Dead Space vibes are coming from, but it is like I would urge people to not hold it to the same standard as Dead Space, because it is sort of different as well in its own right. I mean, I'd like to kind of give my thoughts on Callisto Protocol in another episode, so we can kind of reserve that for its own time.
Yeah.
Because eventually you'll be able to play it.
I'll get around to it eventually.
Once we've both played it, we can then give it its own dedicated episode, and we can tie it back into the Dead Space series, because
it is interesting. Though. It is interesting that potentially has a lot of links to what Dead Space could have been if the game didn't go in a different direction. Because obviously another game that is very that's very very famous and very synonymous with Dead Space is Resident Evil, isn't it, Zach?
Well, yeah, that's it. Like a lot of the inspiration that was given to the devs for Dead Space was derived from Resident Evil 4. And there are similarities throughout both games, to be fair. You know, the over the shoulder third person camera angle, the way that the action kind of plays out, although I do feel that Dead Space is a more polished product because it's a couple of years younger than Resident Evil 4. It's also down to some of the enemies as well. I mean, there are regenerator type enemies in the Dead Space series that they are called regenerators, very much like one of the enemies from Resident Evil 4. But the similarities, not only to Resident Evil 4, but also to other forms of media, you know, are very apparent all the way through. You know, I get very alien vibes. I get John Carpenter's The Thing vibes from the monster design.
Event Horizon, to be fair, as well.
Event Horizon is another one.
Event Horizon, if it was a video game, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, they're all really, really good comparisons. And you can all see where that... Because a lot of those films, or well, all of those films, have made their mark within that kind of sci-fi horror kind of hall of fame, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can kind of see where that inspiration's been drawn into the Dead Space universe.
It's always interesting. So Glenn Schofield, again, one of the guys behind it, he often described the game as being like Resident Evil in space. And when the game was first being developed, basically, they were looking at approaching it more like a game called System Shock, which is a very famous sci-fi horror game on PC, very old game. Also getting a remake, by the way. Add that to the remake pile as well.
Is it coming out this year?
I don't know. It's a bit weird, that one, because you can download the demo and play it on Steam, but then they sort of stopped telling anyone when the game was going to come out. So I don't know. It might come out this year. The demo was actually quite enjoyable. I liked it a lot. It's got a very interesting graphic approach, because it's sort of like modern kind of techniques, but they've sort of integrated oldy kind of pixel stuff in it as well.
Yeah,
it looks kind of nice. But regardless, so Schofield basically said that was the kind of direction they wanted to go, and then they completely changed it, like Zach said, when Resident Evil 4 came out, and that then became a primary inspiration for the team on the kind of the gameplay. But Schofield always said that he wanted Dead Space to be more active than Resident Evil 4, because he said that the necessity to stop and shoot in Resident Evil would ruin the immersion of Dead Space.
Yeah, yeah, I can completely stand by that and agree with it, because I think that's one thing more than anything that dates Resident Evil 4 is it's the movement. Again, they hadn't quite stepped out of the tank controls, and having to stop and shoot is just daft. And that was something that they carried on. They didn't even get rid of that until Resident Evil 6, which is regarded as one of their least favorite games they made.
I know, right?
So it was clinging to that old tank control thing. So I'm glad that Dead Space didn't follow suit with that, because absolutely, it would have suffered.
Yeah.
Especially because you need to be light on your feet. You need to be able to move around, because more often than not, you're going to be outnumbered, and you're going to need to relocate to move to a better location, because otherwise you're just going to get swarmed. And
100%, yeah.
The game is punishing. It will fuck you up and you will die quick.
The game is punishing. It's a hard game, actually. And I'm kind of looking forward to fucking diving into to the remake and playing it on a bit of a harder difficulty, to be fair. I won't lie.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump in the deep end and see the worst it can throw at me.
Yeah.
Because the ending sequence is the first game off. solid.
Oh, they are. They absolutely are. You know, replaying the original one at the moment on hard difficulty, and I have to admit there have been a few occasions where I've been like, fucking hell, like I didn't stand a chance there. I got absolutely demolished. Mm. And it's just great. Like, it's so the difficulty isn't unfair though. I think it's the scaling is pretty cock on.
Mm. Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
So, you know, they did it well. And I mean, the game's hard, like we said, on even on normal, you know, it's still a challenge. So it's not a game that you can just casually play. Like, you know, it requires investment, but not too much investment.
No.
But,
so what about the characters in this game then? So should we give an introduction to Isaac?
Yeah, so Isaac Clarke is obviously our main protagonist, as we've mentioned. Now, he's an engineer aboard a ship called the USG Kellion, which is like a small response craft, basically. And he has been, he's been sent to the USG Ishimura along with a small response team in order to kind of repair the Ishimura and get it back up and running, because a distress signal was sent out shortly after the planet was cracked.
when we say small team as well, we mean like two other people. Like, he's not going in like
there are five if you count the two red shirts they go.
Oh, I guess, well. I suppose, yeah. I didn't count the red shirts because, well, yeah, exactly.
Spoiler alert, they die quick.
They do not last any length of time. That's actually, you know, remember them at all.
No, they're not very memorable. But Isaac is there. His mission there is kind of twofold. So obviously he's there to first and foremost repair the USG Ishimura and get it back up and running, find out what happened there. But also his significant other is actually aboard the USG Ishimura. She's a medical officer aboard. So following the distress signal, you know, he obviously volunteered. He wanted to go to try and find his girlfriend and to try and save her from whatever peril she might be in. So he's got a little bit of a white knight agenda going on there as well. Don't worry, dear, I'll save you.
Interesting little tidbit though, just before we go into it. The ship that he's on, the Kellion, yeah?
The Kellion, yeah.
The Kellion. So the anime film, the first anime film, that is where that film actually ends, basically. That film ends with someone on the Ishimura issuing the distress signal.
Yeah, so it ties in absolutely spot on.
Yeah. You can watch the anime, play Extraction if you really want to be in the game, or you can watch anime and you can roll straight into the new game, straight into the first game. Because from what I understand, like we said before, this new game, the remake they're making, is pretty much going to be totally faithful to the first game storyline. It's only going to add to it. It's not going to take anything away.
Yeah, and I should also mention as well that Isaac has like a small clip of a video that was recorded by Nicole, who's his other half, and it's kind of obviously staticky and it's not complete. It's just a fragment of the video that she recorded, but it's kind of like she's saying that things have gone bad, basically. So you don't have the full picture. So you've got this kind of like progressive narrative where you start off with very few of the facts and you kind of learn things about your mission and about the characters around you as you go along.
It's very it is very crazy and very chaotic, and it gets, you know, more chaotic later on, but I think that actually has a lot of credence to the storytelling and also to what's happening to Isaac at the time as well. The story very much mirrors that quite nicely, what happens to Isaac and this journey he goes on and you know, how kind of fragmented his thinking becomes towards the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the actual, you know, just the trauma of witnessing what he witnesses, but also, obviously, as we will discuss a little bit later on as well, there is another force at play here that's kind of caused the whole disaster anyway, and that has also had an effect on Isaac. Not that he realizes at the time, not till quite far down the line. But yeah, so Isaac is there. He is with his small crew. It also consists of four other individuals. But the like we said, we call them red shirts because they're not even given names. They're just two security dudes.
They are just two security guys.
Yeah. You have Kendra Daniels, who's a computer specialist. And she kind of serves as a bit of the she's like a guide for quite a lot of the game. She will present you with a lot of objectives and kind of give you guidance, unlock certain doors for you when she can, so on and so forth. And you have Zach Hammond, who's the head of security aboard the Kellion as well. So he's a soldier first and foremost. He's very kind of prim and proper. It's all about the mission. You know, we have to put all of our reservations aside and focus on the job that we're here to do. So kind of quite early on, you get this kind of clash of personalities between Kendra and Zach, and you get that impression almost immediately that they just don't get along. You know, you've got the kind of the staunch military man, Zach, and then Kendra is very much kind of like she seems quite empathetic and quite emotionally switched on to the situation. And she's the first one to go like, no, we should just get out of here. Things don't seem right.
We need to haul ass out of this business. Also, disclaimer as well, because the remake is apparently going to be so faithful, we're going to talk obviously, you know, about the plot here. We won't go too in detail, obviously, but we're going to talk about the plot. So, spoiler warning.
big ass spoiler. Like, I mean, all of our episodes should have spoiler warnings on them anyway.
All
like,
these discussion ones, big ass spoiler warning, because if they are right in what they're saying and they're not going to change much, then we're going to tell the story, basically.
We are going to tell the story, yeah. But I want to try and keep it as brief as possible. We're not going to go room by room because it would take. We'd be here until next Christmas.
There's a lot of rooms,
so there's a lot of rooms. Yeah,
Isaac and the gang obviously show up on Ishimura, don't they? They struggle to get aboard the Ishimura first of all, don't they? Because there's an issue with the docking procedures onto the ship. Obviously, they don't know it yet, but that's because the ship is locked the fuck down in quarantine because of the nasties that are now on the ship, right?
So yeah, the gravity tethers almost smash the Kellion into the side of the Ishimura, you know, and you'd just be tiny bits floating in space. They managed to manually crash the ship into the flight deck, and
another happy landing.
Another happy landing, and they're stranded aboard the Ishimura. So they're hoping, maybe we'll get a few folks down here, and we can get our ship fixed, so we can help them.
Because obviously, at this point, right, they're under the impression, the ship is not working. But, you know, apart from that, right, it should mostly be fine, you know? Shouldn't be anything else wrong with it, should there? The ship's broken, but everyone else should be going along.
That's it, yeah. So there's got to be somebody aboard, right? You know, where did they all go, right? So they enter the flight deck, and Isaac is able to get into this little booth, basically, just to check what's happening with the Ishimura. And it's at this point, then, the ship just hits the proverbial fan. these grotesque humanoid monsters start breaking in through the vents with these giant like scythe arching appendages coming over from their back over their shoulders, and they wipe out the two red shirts. They die almost instantly.
Yeah, these creatures are looking horrific when you first see them. Like Zach said, right, definitely throws back to John Carpenter's The Thing in terms of our appearance. So if you've seen The Thing and you know the creature of The Thing and the kind of hybrid kind of almost bastardization, right, of the human form that The Thing kind of does when it inhabits the bodies, that's very much what necromorphs look like, aren't they? They have human features still, but they are very much changed and twisted and warped.
Absolutely. There's very little of that humanity remaining, but you can still tell that they once were human. Obviously they make, well, not all of them, but some of them maintain their kind of like bipedal stance. But the real human arms kind of tuck into the chest, and then those kind of overarching scythe appendages become their kind of, that they become their arms, basically. So they kind of arch out of the back, almost like you'd expect wings to kind of shoot out of the back of the shoulder blade. So they're hideous, and the creature design I absolutely love. There are so many different types of necromorphs as well, because they are called the necromorphs.
That is their name.
And obviously we can run through a few types of those a little bit later on, but there's a lot of variety. You know how like with some games we've kind of said, you know, what's kind of missing here is the variety in enemies. It gets a bit samey. Definitely not the case with Dead Space. There's enough variety to keep you going.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of Necromorphs and Dead Space that are very cool. And I think they only really get cooler as time goes along, because two, the second game, has a lot of really cool Necromorphs in it as well that are brand new. And obviously three, too, has a few kind of cool ones. But one is obviously where you get the classic Necromorphs, and a lot of that then obviously appear in the other games too, don't they? They do come back and they do make throwbacks.
Yeah, they're kind of the bread and butter enemies, aren't they?
What is really interesting about Necromorphs, though, I think, is their in-game kind of mechanics. So there is a very very poignant kind of statement, isn't there, in Dead Space, on how you deal with the enemies. When Isaac comes across his first real weapon in the game, which is the plasma cutter, which isn't even a real weapon technically, it is literally just an engineering tool, isn't it? Repurposed into a weapon,
kind of resembles a pistol. If you were to liken it to a weapon,
it
has that kind of pistol grip, and it's got a laser sight, but it's primarily meant for cutting minerals.
Yeah.
So it's like you said, it's and it's the same with quite a lot of the weapons in inverted commas that you use in the game.
Yeah.
They are just kind of repurposed mining and engineering tools that are pretty lethal when used on organic targets.
Oh yeah, yeah, incredibly lethal. And that's where this statement rings home true. So as Isaac picks up this plasma cutter, on the wall written in blood, there is a very iconic statement called, it says, cut off their limbs. And that's basically the direction you're given in how to deal with the Necromorphs, you know. Unlike other games or old school zombie games where, you know, going for the head is traditionally the way to kill the creature.
Yes.
The Necromorphs, that does not work at all.
Yeah, I like the fact that they decided to step away from the norms, because I mean that's pretty much in every game, isn't it? Like the head, you always have the chance to deal more damage to an enemy by shooting it in the head,
exactly.
Or if it's got like a glowy weak spot, that tends to be the other one, right? And they kind of followed suit a little bit with the glowy weak spot with certain enemies in this, but for most enemies, it is just take those arms and legs off. That's the best way to deal with them, because once the arms and legs are gone, they ain't killing anyone.
No. But what is interesting as well is taking off single arms, single legs, the creatures will still come for you. They won't stop. They will keep on moving, even if they have to crawl across the ground towards you, which is really cool and horrifying to see.
Yeah. Like they are relentless, and they are almost unstoppable in a lot of instances. Shooting them in the body, just that'll do nothing, and you just waste ammo. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you kind of, you almost have to flip your instincts on its head. Don't aim for the head, and don't go for center of mass, because it will do very little to these monsters. Mm. So
getting rid of blood seems to be like a primary thing as well when you read a lot of the logs in the game. So like it has a theory that the Necromorph host body basically survives off the blood that's in the body. So when you're cutting the limbs, obviously you're causing heavy blood loss, which in turn is stops the creature from going and carrying on, basically. Which lends its way to that whole cut the limbs off, and that's how you do big damage to the creatures. But also burning as well. Burning is one that you see a lot in the game too, don't you?
And again, that's a classic, and that taps into your John Carpenter's The Thing, then, doesn't it? Yeah, the flamethrower.
Yeah.
That was one of their primary ways to combat the thing. So yeah, definitely kind of, you can see where it's kind of tapping into that a little bit as well.
It was the technique of doing it was dubbed by the dev team as strategic dismemberment.
Yeah, we're all guilty of it. Anybody that's played the game is definitely guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
I always tend to go for the legs first, take the legs off.
It's a good one. Either that or the big blades, because they're carrying big blades in their arms sometimes. You can hop off a few of those, and then they're kind of just like torsoing you.
They're a lot harder to hit though when they've got all of their limbs. So
that is true.
Taking the legs off gives you a much easier chance to hit the arms and to dispatch them safely. Whereas if you're shooting wildly at the arms, I find, especially with my aim, I tend to miss sometimes. Mm. So
ironically as well, with Dead Space, there is a lot of weapons. We're touching on weapons as well. There's a lot of cool weapons, like Zach said, a lot of ones that are literally just repurposed. Just tools and stuff like that, like cutters and like small little flamethrowers, that kind of thing. There is actually legit guns in the game, like the assault rifle, right? That one is actually a legit.
Yeah, the pulse rifle is really cool.
And it's cool, but it actually isn't super effective, which I kind of like, because it's like in these circumstances, you'd think that the thing that's actually a weapon would be, you know, one of the best things to use, right? When actual fact, it's like you could get a better response if you use a plasma cutter. And in fact, you can pretty much play through the entirety of Dead Space if you want to, using just a plasma cutter.
I mean, there's even a trophy or an achievement for playing the entire game just with the initial plasma cutter weapon that you pick up.
And it's not even a bad gun either.
No, especially when you start upgrading it as well, because you have to remember that throughout the game you pick up power nodes that allow you to upgrade the circuits and the weapons to make them stronger.
Yeah.
And like a fully upgraded plasma cutter is probably one of the best weapons in the game.
Yeah, no, it's really solid. It's a game where you can literally take that base gun and you can go the full whack with it throughout the entire game, which is kind of cool. Sadly, that's something that we're going to talk about way down the line when we talk about the third game that kind of got sadly messed up. But for the first two games, that theory does ring true. You can play exclusively with just that item if you want to, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool looking anyway, so you know, you don't mind. But yeah, so obviously he's got this notion now, we've got to cut off the limbs, that's the only way I'm going to be able to survive and kill these things, right? So split up from the rest of the team, Isaac has to make his way through the ship on his own. He's still within radio contact with them, but you're on your own for most of the game as well, which is very kind of synonymous with the classic kind of survival horror tropes, isn't it? There are games that obviously do it where they're, it is more co-op oriented, or that you have AI companions with you that will help you out throughout the game. But this is very much a kind of you're on your own.
You're kept in kind of touch by people on the ship. Obviously Kendra and Hammond talk to you through kind of chats and that kind of thing. And obviously you also pick up a lot of audio video logs during your time on the ship as well, which helps to paint a more clearer picture for Isaac, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So you start to, as we said earlier, you have that kind of closed narrative, and then you kind of piece things together as you go along. And a lot of those, those video logs and those audio logs, they will give you, they're just obviously tools used for exposition, just gives you a little bit more of a snapshot of what's happened, and it will give you context to certain areas that you're in, and also hints and tips on how to play the game as well.
It's quite good. I actually really clever. I love the audio video system. Obviously, BioShock, right? Another game I absolutely love, made great use of that feature as well. I think it really adds a lot of credence and a lot of life to the world you're in. You can imagine and envision what it was like before it obviously went to shit, right? BioShock is Rapture. In this game, it's Ishimura.
Yeah, and I do think it's definitely more of a lazy man's tool for exposition. Not everybody wants to read notes. Like nobody has time for that. But if somebody's reading it to them,
exactly. Yeah,
9 times out of 10, you're going to pay attention to what you're listening to, right?
Obviously, you can still go about your business, and Isaac can still do stuff while he's listening to these audio logs as well. So it's pretty easy to whack him on and listen to him as you're walking around the Ishimura. And if anything, it's almost like the only thing you can listen to, because apart from that, it's just your silence and the sounds of horrific creatures that want to kill you.
Yeah. That being said, though, I think that the atmosphere for the Ishimura is fantastic.
Spot on.
There are some really great moments where you're in that kind of deafening quiet, but you're not alone, because you've got a string quartet behind you playing some creepy ass shit.
the crescendo.
And it's the monster sounds and stuff like that. Even if you can't see a monster, you can still hear them. If you're diligent enough, you can hear that kind of like those hideous gurgling sounds that they make and stuff around the corner. So you're like, I know where it is, but I know there's something here, but I don't know where it is. The game makes use of a lot of kind of jump scares as well, but it's not done in a tacky horror kind of way. I feel like a lot of the jump scares are pretty tasteful, and they tend to involve actual enemies for you to fight as well. So it's not just like, there are a couple of ones that are just like environmental scares. You're like, oh shit, I didn't see that coming, right? But it's things like the slashers, who are like the standard necromorph enemy. A lot of the time they'll play dead and they'll be lying on the ground there, and you're like, well, that's a body. I don't know if that's still alive or... And you take the whole the Zombieland double tap thing to heart, and you're like, well, I'm not going to take the chance. I'm just going to start cutting limbs off and hope for the best.
You've got the stomp ability, man. You've got to bring it out.
And you've got the
big
stomp.
Foot down. You're just fucking curb stomping these things on the floor, mate, making sure they are definitely dead.
Yeah. So that's another good thing, a good part of the game as well. Like there is melee combat. Like it's not advised, because it's just primarily there to create some space, or to, like you said, to stomp enemies that are on the ground. But you have a wild swing that you can kind of throw at them to just give yourself a little bit of breathing space so you can line up that shot. So it's kind of nice that they've got that in there as well.
Yeah.
And it's just overall quite well-rounded, the combat.
The combat is very substantial. Yeah, it's very fulfilling. It feels nice. It feels hearty. The weapons feel responsive when you're using them as well. And like I said, cutting off the limbs, like that, it's a fantastic tactile response in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of progressing throughout the through the story, at this point, because Isaac is on his own, he needs to you get to basically a bit where you need to restart the tram system. And I think this is a really cool part of the game as well, where how you get around the ship is you have these tram systems that you use, and they signify the start and the end of most of the chapters in the game. Mm. So you will start and finish in a tram for pretty much the whole game. And I think that's quite cool as well, that they kind of have that. So when you make it to the tram at the end, you see on the map where you are on the ship and you see where you're going next. So you've got this kind of context of whereabouts you are on this huge ship.
Mm. Isaac has got sort of tasked with fixing up the main kind of functions of the Ishimura, right, isn't he, to try and get himself not only back to his rest of his comrades, but also progress through this hellhole. And in doing so as well, find Nicole, because he's also, you know, side plot, he's trying to find Nicole too.
Yeah, and because he's the engineer, he's the only one kind of qualified and able to do a lot of the tasks that you end up doing in the game as well. So while it can get quite frustrating when you've got these characters going, oh man, you need to do this, you need to do that. And it's like, well, why don't you do it? And they go, oh wait, because you can't.
Yeah.
It's quite cool, the kind of the tasks that they get you to do throughout the game as well, while you're fixing various parts of the ships, you know. And it kind of involves something else that I want to go into as well, which is the Kinesis module, which is quite cool. So you've got two modules that you kind of use, and they're like your utility skills, but they can also be used in combat as well. It's Kinesis and Stasis. So Kinesis obviously gives you the ability to pick up objects, sometimes objects that are far heavier than you'd be able to carry as a normal human. And you can throw those about, you know, it gives you the option. A lot of the kind of the puzzles are based in and around using Kinesis to move heavy objects around and certain bits and pieces and whatnot. Mm. And then you've got Stasis, which obviously slows things down. So for a short period of time, that allows you to put a stasis field around an object or an enemy to slow them down, which will give you either time to kill the enemy, or if it's part of a puzzle, maybe you've got this kind of like high speed gyro that you need to fit in place, but you've got to slow it down in order to be able to drag it over. Stasis and Kinesis then obviously allow you to do that.
Mm. So as Isaac is going around, obviously listening to these, you know, all these kind of audio logs and whatnot, he starts obviously to how would I put this? He starts not feeling a bit well, does he? Not a bit right.
No, that's it. Like there's the kind of the team members that are still alive, they start seeing things and hearing things. There's definitely something not right, you know, and you kind of think, well, I'm probably not, you know, I'm not really that surprised, because I'd be batshit crazy if I encountered this kind of situation that they're in. So, you know,
sorts. We got psychosis, we got hallucinations, we got paranoia, ironically, you know, a lot of themes Outlast flirted with, didn't it?
Yes.
A lot of that kind of absolutely. Stuff. Yeah, we now find ourselves in Dead Space also making those bringing those kind of things into the light.
Yeah, you know, nerves are frayed, and you know, you can't really trust what you see. Like it gets to a point in the game where you're not really sure what's real and what's not in certain circumstances, because you're seeing like all kinds of things happening. There's one particular bit that I think is really cool. It's a little bit later on in the game when you make it to the crew quarters, and it's you literally step off the tram and there's just like this scene of like ritual suicide. Basically, there's all these dead bodies around, and there's like candles and graffiti on the walls, all like the symbols and bits and pieces that you've been seeing on screens throughout the game and whatnot. And all you can hear is this woman's voice singing "Twinkle Twinkle Little Star."
Oh yeah, that bit is horrifically frightening.
And That's such a poignant moment in the game, because that's at the point where you're like, fuck it, you know, we've passed the point of no return at this point.
The OG now, trailer used that song as well, the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And I'm a bit sad that the recent remake trailer didn't play on it as well. The remake trailer is good, the new one, but it's kind of a little bit more actiony. It's a little bit more actiony. The OG one was kind of scary with the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star song.
Yeah, because I mean, if you've ever seen the cover art as well, obviously, like it's just like the Isaac's hand like severed and it's floating in space, right? And that's how they finished the trailer with the shot of the arm floating around in space. So, like, it's really good. And if for any of our listeners, if you've never seen that trailer, I'd highly recommend you watch that because
the OG trailer is someone else.
All of the horror vibes from it. Like, the game doesn't jump out straight away as an action game. Because they lent so heavily into the horror side of it, which I love.
Mm. Oh, it oozes horror, doesn't it? What's the next bit then, my man? As you're going along, I think it's the other ship, isn't it? Because there's another ship comes to play.
So yeah, so once the tram system's repaired, obviously there are a couple of tasks that you go on. You meet back up with Zach and Kendra a couple of times.
This is obviously the abridged version.
Yeah, and you keep getting split up because there are things that need happening. You know, you go to hydroponics at one point. The hydroponics part of the game is actually really good because that's where you fight one of the bosses of the game, the Leviathan, which is that's a really cool part.
That's a cool one, yeah.
And there are these like mutated humans that are kind of giving off these poisonous clouds. It's basically poisoning the air system in the ship. So if you don't deal with them quickly, the ship's there's not going to be no breathable air basically. So fighting the Leviathan is a lot of fun. When you actually get to that point, it's locked itself away in food storage, and it's just kind of gorging itself. And it's just like this giant growth on the wall with these
big old necromorph tentacle thing.
Yeah, this hideous like tendril things coming out, and again tapping into the whole kind of glowy shoot the glowy node kind of way of fighting bosses.
Yeah,
that's kind of they tap into that a little bit, and that's quite a cool fight as well.
Mm. It helps to mark out the areas that you need to cut really when you're fighting them.
Yeah, so once Isaac has got the air back up and running, and he's defeated the Leviathan, they then turn their attention to seeking help. So he heads down to the engineering deck to attach a beacon, a distress beacon, to a meteor that's kind of loaded up onto the Ishimura. After many, many trials and tribulations, lots of death and destruction and puzzles and so on and so forth, you hurl the meteor into the vacuum of space. And quite quickly, another ship responds, and it's a military vessel. So this military vessel, if I can remember the name of it.
The Valor,
that's it, mm-hmm. That's it, yeah.
The USM Valor.
The Valor is coming up to the Ishimura. And one thing that we didn't mention earlier on is that Hammond had a run-in with a necromorph, and he managed to lock it into an escape pod, and he launches it out into the vacuum of space going, ha. Got rid of that one. Unfortunately,
this is what I mean, right, by the fact that the game will dangle the hope carrot in front of you only to snatch it away at last minute. You're like, this is fantastic, the Valor's coming, we're going to be saved, we'll get out of here, thank God, right?
Yeah, only to find out that the Valor has picked up the escape pod. So now the necromorphs are aboard the Valor, and the Valor crashes right into the side of the Ishimura.
Sideswipes it completely.
Yeah, so to the point where they almost space hulk it, where the ships kind of merge. Mm. That's a really cool segment as well on the Valor, because you get introduced to a bunch of new enemies as well.
Yeah, very cool.
And the Valor is a change of scenery as well, which is quite good. You're kind of used to, by that point in the game, you're used to being on the USG Ishimura. You know, a lot of it is quite blocky and kind of heavy duty, kind of industrial kind of feel to the to the atmosphere that you're in. So to be able to step from that into a kind of albeit heavily damaged kind of military vessel, it is a bit of a change of scenery as well, which is quite nice.
So after the Valor incident, obviously, and once again you're kind of brought back, aren't you, to the Ishimura, sort of licking your wounds, you end up getting the core, don't you, from the Valor. You go to the Valor and you get the core from the ship, don't you?
Yeah, so basically you can try and get one of the shuttles from
from the Ishimura up and running so you can try and escape, basically. One thing before we move on from the Valor that I would like to mention is one of the enemy types. It's the Twitcher. Like the Twitchers and that. They're annoying, but they're quite cool. And those are soldiers. They're basically like a slasher variant. But because they've got stasis modules on them, the mutation has been affected by the stasis module. So they're almost
really
like in they're like in a state of perpetual energy drink overdose, because they're just twitchy as fuck, and they're like, they run really fast, and even if you hit them with stasis, with your own stasis ability, it only slows them down for a very short period of time, and then they're back up to full speed again. So they're pretty deadly. I liked those ones because you can see where the armor's kind of melded into the flesh, and their heads are all kind of like deformed, where the parts of the helmet of like it almost looks like subdermal armor, where it's kind of like molded into the skin. Those are quite cool. I liked those.
Well, I'll try not to get too into it because there's quite a lot. There's a theme in Dead Space, or a feature in Dead Space, which obviously has become a bit of a theme in the Callisto Protocol as well, right? And that's the fact of violent deaths. And that's something that Dead Space introduced quite heavily. And obviously, now it's went to Callisto Protocol, so if that's not an indication of, you know, similar people working on it, you know, that's the most clear-cut one, right? So there's a lot of very interesting, very graphic custom deaths that Isaac can get if you die in the game, which is pretty horrific. But in a way, I guess it's a little bit rewarding, you know, when you do sometimes die in the game, because some of them are horrifically brutal.
Yeah, like, we've got some really sadistic devs on our hands.
There is some deaths in this game which are absolutely vile. One of my favorite ones, I just want a special shout out, is the head necromorph. There's a necromorph that you find a little later, which is very weak. It's a very weak necromorph, but it has, I think, one of the most scariest death animations in the game. And it's basically a head with like tentacles on it. And this sort of, the way it kills Isaac is just straight up horrific. It kind of wraps itself around its neck, Isaac's neck, and sort of rips his head off, and then replaces his head with that head.
After
Isaac kind of like stumbles backwards and forwards, and he kind of turns around and like looks at the camera, and it's the necromorph now controlling Isaac's body.
Yeah,
really fucking creepy. When that first happened to me in the game, I was like stunned. I was like, oh my god, that's so horrific.
It's vile. And again, like it's a great it's kind of great as well that you almost get a bit of a throwback of that as well. Again, we'll jump over to Resident Evil real quickly. With the Resident Evil 3, you know, those NE parasites that Nemesis, you know, the meatballs on the top of their head.
Yeah, the meatball ones.
When they try and obviously grab Jill and put the meatball onto her head, that death animation is almost like shot for shot exactly the same as the head death from Dead Space. So I think that's kind of a little bit of the sincerest form of flattery going on there.
It's very cool that they put it in, to be fair. Like I said, it adds a little bit of funness, I guess, to the act of dying in a video game while not being, you know, great. It sort of alleviates, I think, some of the stress, because it's quite cool to see the many inventive ways that you can get Isaac killed in the game.
Yeah, like it's a testament to the devs, because they went to a lot of effort to make all of those deaths very unique. It's just the way that, like, sometimes you'll just get like hit by something and you'll just explode. It's just legs left, arms and legs. Yeah, it's just great, but it's also not great because it's horrible to watch.
So a bit of a side thing as we get along. After you come back, you're basically contacted, aren't you, by a doctor, who's a very important character in the game. He's actually one of two very important characters in the game. One being Benjamin Matthews, who is the captain of the Ishimura himself, and the doctor, who I think his name is like Klein.
Yeah, so
Dr. Klein, Terence Klein, I think that's his name.
There's two doctors. There's Terence Klein, who is the one that contacts you via the radio. He's looking to, basically, he needs your help to be able to get off the ship. So he's like, you help me, I help you. So he becomes a little bit of an ally about halfway through the game. And then there's another one called Chalice Mercer. And that guy he's on the next level of fucked up.
He is fucked up.
he's an incredibly talented scientist, but he's also a devout unitologist. Now we haven't really explained unitology yet.
This is something you start to find as you go along, right? You start to see the texts and the symbols, you know, the symbols on the walls, and Isaac obviously starts seeing these kind of symbols in places that he probably shouldn't be seeing them as well. And this is what relates to, as Zach said, the Church of Unitology, which becomes sort of one of the main antagonist factions in the series.
Yeah, they're a cult-like religion that worships an object known as the Marker. And
this is important right here.
This is very important. It's very, very, very poignant at this point. So through worship of the Marker, the kind of the Unitologists hope to discover the true origin of humanity as they seek transformation and rebirth. So seeing the Necromorphs and kind of what has happened in the wake of the kind of the incident here on the Ishimura, Chalice Mercer absolutely 100% believes that this is it. This is the ascension. The original Marker, just a little fun fact, was actually discovered sometime about 300 years before the events of the game by an individual called Michael Altman, who is kind of like the messiah that the religion is based in and around. Altman was actually murdered and used as a martyr and a prophet by the founder of Unitology, a guy called Craig Markoff, who was like he was part of the military, but he was a devout religious man. So kind of even the religion itself is based in very kind of dubious and questionable kind of origins, you know, based on a reluctant prophet by the person that killed that prophet.
this is why I think Kine's character is kind of interesting when he comes into the fold, because he obviously is he's stated to be a Unitologist. He's a very, very strong believer of Unitology, isn't he?
You can almost see that he's very disillusioned.
Yeah, he very quickly realizes once, you know, this stuff starts happening that maybe it's not the religion to follow. maybe it's not what you need. And he very quickly, you know, tries to persuade people that it's not a good idea what they're doing. Because it comes to light, obviously, as you would have found out by now in the game, that the Ishimura was illegally mining on the planet, illegally cracking, because they had found a marker that was on the surface of the planet.
Yes, yeah. So we actually haven't mentioned the name of the planet either. Nope. It's Aegis 7 is the name of the colony planet. And yeah, as you said, it was actually illegal to mine the planet and for a very good reason.
It was sanctioned off by Earth, the kind of the big corps that run Earth sanctioned it to not mine on the planet because of the prevalence of the marker being there. And this marker, obviously, this artifact, like Zach said, the kind of what effectively is almost like the cross, really, to Christianity, is their cross. And the markers are the things that drive the change and bring about the Necromorphs.
Yeah, the actual design of the marker, I think, is really cool as well.
It's a very cool.
It's kind of like it looks like in Skyrim with the Daedric kind of.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of like demonic look about it, but they're two spires that are kind of entwined and then meet at the top.
I always think it's like a sort of a play on kind of the DNA strands, you know?
Yes.
Mixed together. It's like this spiral kind of helix almost, but it caps off to like a tip, to like a point, basically a very sharp point. And it's covered in all these symbols and stuff like that. And that's the symbols that the church uses as its text, basically. It's holy scriptures are wrote in those symbols.
Yeah. And it's clever the way that it kind of unfolds, because initially you get the impression that it was like an alien infection that was triggered that landed, or they had uncovered on the surface of the colony. And you kind of get the impression that, you know, it's alien life. But as you kind of go forward, the marker is the source of the Necromorphs, and it's also the source of everything going wrong to those that are alive. The marker brings insanity, and, you know, it causes the kind of the subjects to hallucinate, violent hallucinations, you know, brings on things like schizophrenia and like all kinds of crazy, nasty shit, you know, hysteria and paranoia, like you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And to those that are dead, it creates the Necromorphs. It's something about like an energy field that the marker emits, causes this.
It brings about this change.
This change, on a molecular level.
And obviously, when this was discovered on this planet, right, you had a lot of the factions, obviously the Earth government and the mining corporations and the church of Unitology. They basically the church obviously knew about this marker being hidden there, and they slowly started to replace a lot of people on the Ishimura with their own agents, you know, their own people, people that believed, with the subtext that they were going there for a very important job, and that was to reclaim the marker, right?
Yeah, yeah. Even the captain himself, Benjamin Mathias, as you mentioned earlier, right? Devout Unitologist, right? He was, as soon as he knew that the marker was there, as soon as they'd uncovered it, he was like, get it on the ship immediately.
Yeah, we need to get this now.
So, yeah. So, like, you know, to him, this is like the holy grail for his religion. So, as you've mentioned, Terence Kyne becomes very, very disillusioned very quickly with this. He has his doubts because he kind of, he's already seen what's happened on the colony. He doesn't want to bring that onto the ship. So he enacts the right to overthrow Benjamin Mathias, the captain, basically saying, "Look, you're mad. You're going to get us all killed." Now, Kyne, he tries to overthrow him and injects him with a serum of some form, but he actually kills the captain. The captain is killed in the scuffle, and Kyne is imprisoned, and that's why he's able to survive for as long as he does.
Yeah.
And how he's still alive and still around when Isaac and the crew finally make it there. So he comes across as a bit of a loon, actually. You know, he's talking to himself and talking to people that aren't there in the background of the video.
He's straight up gone doolally as well. And once again, this is also still the same, you know, for our jolly protagonist as well. Isaac is also not looking not firing on all cylinders at this point.
Yeah, and at this point, he's actually been able. He's made contact with Nicole.
He's actually spoken to Nicole quite a few times. Yeah,
she there's this one bit in engineering where he manages to meet up with her, and she unlocks a door for him to be able to get the. That's just before you do the bit with the beacon. So she helps you get one of the pieces of the beacon. So you've seen her about on the ship, and there's a bit where you've got a defender and so on and so forth. So she's always just out of reach. So
every time you're finally going to meet up with her, it's just like, you know, something else happens and gets in the way of it, right? It's that once again they dangle a carrot in front of you and then they pull it away.
So it is that's like you said, a very kind of familiar theme that happens throughout the duration of the game. But Kyne basically says to Isaac, we get a marker, we'll get out of here. We'll get that shuttle fixed up and we can all leave together.
Yeah.
We need to take the marker basically back down to the planet.
Kyne says, doesn't he? He speaks to Isaac about a creature, like a large creature that is responsible for controlling all of the necromorphs.
The hive mind.
Yeah. Ironically, you know, if you play a lot of Warhammer, you can attribute it quite heavily to kind of what the Tyranids are in Warhammer. And how they're kind of how they work. They serve a higher being, basically a higher power. And they're all just kind of drones connected through that higher power. And Kyne talks about this hive mind that was ravaging the colony basically after the planet was cracked open. And he believes that the marker has the power to trap it back in the planet if they can take it back to where it belongs.
We also completely forgot to mention that at this point in the story, Zach Hammond is dead.
Oh yeah, he got slapped up.
he dies on the Valor.
Yeah.
And he gets completely annihilated by one of the larger creatures that you fight in the game called a brute, which is it's exactly what it says on the
which is ironically a bit poetic because it is his fault that the people on the ship died in the first place.
Yes,
because he was the one who locked the necromorph in the thing, right? That shot
fired
out.
fired the escape capsule out into space.
So ironically, it was his fault that the crew of the Valor got eaten by the necromorph.
Strange sense of justice. Yeah,
a little bit, yeah.
but he dies heroically trying to fight the brute. And then
you
have to kill the brute. So going back to obviously where we were, the idea is to get the marker. It's marker 3A as well. So you learn that this isn't the only marker in existence.
There are more others. Like it. This isn't the original, but there are others that exist like that marker.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, this isn't the only one. So this could happen elsewhere. Mm. This is dangerous.
Interesting subplot about that as well is the marker is known as marker 3A, but you actually find that out from reading the log that's on the Valor, in the Marine's log.
Yeah,
and what's interesting is they refer to it as Marker 3A, and it also is interesting because the Marines are aware of it, and it's danger as well.
Well, the Marines are there, and I, again, that's another thing that you find out, that ship That's not loaded for a rescue. Mm-hmm. They're there to destroy. They want to destroy the Ishimura. Mm-hmm. And it's only because that necromorph boards their ship via the escape capsule that they don't blow the Ishimura.
They are given orders. We're not sure who, but I assume it's the Earth government, like the OG Earth government, that originally prohibited people from going to the planet, right, to find the marker. I reckon it's probably them. That's because it's never said who it is, yeah, who gives them the orders, but I reckon that's probably who it is, storyline purposes.
I mean, it's a cover-up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's someone who knows about the operation, knows about the marker.
Yeah, they don't want the marker to be uncovered because, obviously, we can see exactly what it does.
The kind of shit that happens, right?
Yeah, so, you know, you go through a bit of an ordeal to get the marker loaded onto the shuttle, and you finally reunited with Daniels, obviously the computer expert that you came with.
Yeah.
And she betrays you.
Oh yes, she performs the old twist.
Yeah, she kills Kain, steals that marker, and she buggers off tries to bugger off in the shuttle.
Mm, she kind of declares herself like a government operative as well, basically, and says that she's known all this the entire time. Like, she's known everything that's happening the whole time, and it's her job basically to resolve this situation.
Yeah, despite pointing the finger at Hammond several times, trying to pass the blame over to him, right?
Yeah.
She's constantly like, "No, we should have bought the mission." Blah blah blah, right?
She basically says that Marker 3A was basically a reverse engineer copy of the original marker that was found on Earth. So scientists made this and they placed it on the planet hundreds of years, basically, to see what it would do and to watch its effects, essentially.
Yeah, so again, another plot that ends up being humanity trying to play God.
And fucked it completely.
Yeah, exactly. So the symbols that you see on the marker, they are almost like a blueprint to creating necromorphs. Humanity have reversed engineered this, and they've played God and tried to take that power into their own hands.
This is another reason why it was declared as obviously being, you know, a no-go zone, right? Because they had already tried to see what would happen, realize what had happened, and they were like, "Well, we're just done with this. We don't go back to the planet again."
Which is obviously trying to bury it.
Which is obviously when the church obviously forces the government's hand again by trying to commandeer the Ishimura to then reclaim the marker back.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, that is obviously Daniels tries to escape on the shuttle without Isaac.
She two fingers and she is out of there. So Nicole obviously comes back, and at this point obviously Clark is on his own, Isaac is on his own, Daniels has buggered off in her own pod, she is gone, she's outie, and we are looking at Isaac going alone, and he takes a shuttle back to with the marker back to the original colony, and at this point Nicole is speaking to him and talking to him, and she proclaims that they are now, and they have become whole. So as Nicole states that Isaac and her have for some reason become whole, the marker that Isaac's carrying emits this intense wave of energy, basically, and it completely starts to mess up the tethers that are holding the planet, basically, because the planet's still kind of held in the Ishimura's grasp, isn't it?
Yeah, and you have to remember that there's basically a giant chunk of the planet just kind of hovering above. So the Ishimura is keeping that in orbit at the moment. Again, if the gravity tethers fail, that basically giant meteorite comes hurtling back towards the planet.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to be good.
No. So it's the basically the plan of action is to get rid of that marker. Just get rid of it for good.
Drop
take
that
it back
shit
to the planet
right now.
Appease the hive mind. Give it back what it wants, and just get the flipping out of there.
Get out of Dodge immediately. So Daniels returns in a shocking twist, right?
Well, yeah, obviously she escapes in a little escape pod, and she's made
bye.
It out of there.
She comes back.
Yeah. She's like, "I can't believe this. You've mucked my plan up, and I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for that pesky engineer."
Basically, they go down, don't they? She sort of assists, and you do this you do this boss fight, don't you, with the hive mind type thing.
Yeah, the hive mind kind of comes up, and again, lots of tendrils and tentacles and stuff. It's huge, like it's on a
a massive, massive kind of boss.
Yeah, it's like on a world-ending scale. Like it's big. It's a big monster.
Mm-hmm. Big and, old, and it's kind of in the crater, isn't it? From where the planet crack has taken place, this big old multiple tentacle looking thing, lots of mouths and snappy. Ooh, it's proper creepy.
Yeah, it's kind of made its home there in the area that once was a portion of the planet, mm-hmm. and Daniels gets just annihilated. She gets crushed.
She gets wiped out by the hive mind.
She obviously went to the Prometheus school of running away from things, because she just runs in a straight line and goes.
Which obviously, is it a bad thing? Maybe not. I don't know. She wasn't exactly she obviously does the old anime betrayal at the end, mate. So it's not really a loss, is it?
She got what she deserved. So.
She did indeed. Yeah. Which obviously leaves our poor man Isaac to mop up the remains by himself once again, right?
On his own again.
But obviously, this is. I think the chef's kiss moment, I think, of storytelling in this game, right? And that is the video that Isaac watches on his way at the very start of the game. Zach mentioned, obviously, the video he watched of Nicole, right? Of Nicole talking to him.
Yeah. Fragmented, right? Not complete. The fact that she's mentioned that they are whole, right, is very poignant at this moment, because mm-hmm. now you get to watch the whole video, don't you?
Isaac puts on the entire video that was sent to him at the start, and obviously all is not as it seems at all. Towards the end of the video, you see Nicole, and Nicole kills herself in the video.
Via lethal injection.
Mm-hmm. She kills herself as the outbreak happens on the Ishimura, basically, just as it starts. She kills herself, and Isaac obviously sees this, and he is incomplete, you know, catatonic almost, doesn't understand at all, right? Because we've seen Nicole, we've spoke to Nicole, Nicole's been there physically, right? Nicole has been in Isaac's presence, hasn't she?
And it all starts to click, right? Because
everything comes into place.
He's been in contact with the marker. He knows now that it causes hallucinations, violent ones. And then you have this kind of moment of quiet where you're like, you're questioning everything that you've played. You're like, the necromorph's really real? Like,
exactly, yeah. Did any of this really happen? Right? And you get this sort of this calm bit after the hype man is defeated, after Isaac drags himself back to the shuttle that they've managed to fix, obviously using the other parts from the other ship. He sets away, and the video plays again. The suicide video plays again, but he stops it. Isaac stops it, and he just stares off into space, isn't he? And there's this eerie calmness where nothing really happens for a few seconds. And I think as the player, you're kind of there, and you're like, what the fuck, right? This is also the only time of the entire course of this game that Isaac's had any second, I guess, just to sit, right, and ponder.
Apart from when he's there in the Kellyan right at the beginning, right?
Right at the start of the
game. It's kind of cool, actually, because you start in the ship, on that shuttle, in the Kellyan, heading towards that, with your helmet off, mm-hmm. and it's like, you come full circle. So by the end of the game, he takes the helmet off, and he's sat in almost the same posture, but he's kind of like all...
He's sat in the same posture, the same video is playing again, only the real video is playing this time, not the previous docked version, right? The real video is playing, and you're just like, damn, this has been an absolute undertaking, right? And that's when the coup de grace happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you are just sat there, and then you are just jumped. You're suddenly attacked by a vision of Nicole, and she's all bloodied up and mangled.
She's all fucked up.
Yeah, and she kind of like screams into Isaac's face, and you can see like the lights flashing from her eyes and in the mouth.
She's got like lights in her eyes, lights in her mouth. It's proper creepy. It's like light bulbs behind her eyes, bro.
Yeah, it's genuinely like quite disturbing to look
at. It's a very horrific scene. Something also they do reuse in number two, so if you like that,
it is
more on the way.
Yeah. The screen is covered in the symbols from the marker, and you can still hear kind of Nicole screaming, and then it just cuts off the static, and that's the end of the game. It just cuts the black.
That's the end of the game. It ends on that incredible note. It was such a good ending, but it made you be like, oh my God, you know, classic cliffhanger ending. What's going on? What's happened to Isaac? Oh my God, Nicole's dead. Is she really dead? Is Isaac still going crazy? So many questions are thrown at the player at the end of the game. It's fantastic.
Yeah, like it's a really, really good way to leave the game. I mean, you know, it wouldn't have been a great game or a good way to leave the game if we hadn't got a sequel. I'd have been like, no, I want more.
It would have been such a disappointing way, right, to wrap it off if we didn't know what happened. something that I love, by the way, and something that I don't know if anyone's going to get this or if anyone noticed this if they played the game. And part of me didn't want to say this because, you know, but I'm going to say it again, massive spoiler, I mean, you've already listened to the entire episode, so you've spoiled anyway. Yep. But this was crazy when I found it out. So the chapters and the names of the chapters are very interestingly named, in that the first letter of each chapter spells out a message.
Yeah.
And that message is Nicole is dead.
Yeah.
How sick is that?
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? Yeah.
Is that not really good? That is amazing. I had no idea that was a thing at first. And when I found out about it, I read it back and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Because obviously you are led as the player to believe the whole time that Nicole is really alive. Yes. You know, and the game furthers that opinion because you're seen interacting with her almost, right? But like Zach said, you're just out of touch, just out of reach to be fully with her, aren't you? There's something in the back of the mind that's like, I can't be with her fully for some reason. And obviously right at the end, that comes to fruition when you find out that she's dead, and she has been dead since before Isaac showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's, yeah. What a reveal. It's really good. And again, like, you know how we talk about endings that you wish that you could forget.
Oh yeah.
Like we always say that about Silent Hill 2, don't we? Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is another game that I would like to just forget the ending.
Yeah.
So I could.
Dead Space Extreme. You know what? It's very true. It is completely the same, my dude. Like, I think Dead Space is one of those games that if I could forget the storyline for the first game, I would love to. Love to.
Yeah.
It is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. The fact that's hidden in it the whole time, the whole Nicole is dead thing, that's really clever, right? That's such a cool, clever design, isn't it? It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really good way of, and they've taken the time to weave that in. I think that's it. It's a good nod, isn't it?
Another interesting one as well, double barreled, but the DED at the end, those last chapters, they actually also reference the four chapters where the main characters die as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The first one, Dead and Arrival being Hammond, and then Mercer dies in End of Days, Kine dies in Alternate Solutions, and Kendra dies at the very last one.
Oh, yeah.
So they also die during that dead section as well, which is quite interesting. What spells out dead? A little another one there for you.
That's pretty good.
Right?
That is pretty cool. Fun facts, right?
A little fun facts.
I mean, that's kind of like a really, really general overview of the story, right?
Mm, that was a fast forward through, basically, of the story of Dead Space.
There's obviously so much more detail we could go into, but we physically wouldn't have the time to do so.
No.
What I would really like to talk about, I want to talk a little bit more about the equipment and the kind of the unique look and kind of presentation that has, particularly in around the rig. I think the rig is a really interesting point of the game that we've not mentioned yet.
The rig is really cool. The rig is a way of visualizing the health of Isaac, and it's attached to his back, almost like a spine, like a robotic spine that attaches to the back of his suits. And the rig is really interesting because it functions like a way to health, but it's also a really intuitive UI, in that the UI, it floats, there's no kind of pause UI is there in the game. Like the UI itself is all visible and all done through like holograms in the game.
Yeah, so obviously you have your health gauge running along the back of your spine. Over to the right of that, you have a little kind of circular, like it's like a half circle. And that is your stasis gauge. So that lets you know how much stasis you've, how much juice you've got left in the tank for stasis. And then by pressing the Y button, you bring up your old triangle if you're playing on PlayStation. You bring up your menu, and it's like a hologram, you know, like Tony Stark does with his tech, and it comes up in front of him, and then you've got your menu there, and there's a full 3D map that you can swap over tabs into. It's really, I think it's a really cool way of presenting it. And it's even like with the weapons, there's kind of like a holographic number gauge on the side of the weapons to let you know how much ammo you've got, and it's color coded depending on kind of the volume that you have. So if you're close to running out, it goes orange, and then if the magazine's empty, it goes red.
It's a really interesting UI, and I'm actually really looking forward to see how they've done it in the new game as well, and how that kind of relates to it. Because like you said, it was such a cool invention for the time, and it was so different to other games and how other survival horror games were doing the kind of menu system, because the menu system obviously is a very fundamental point about survival horror, isn't it? It's where you get your equipment, it's how you manage your inventory, it's how you change your weapons. Very important.
It also breaks the immersion when you go into a pause menu though, right? Like as much as we love the Resident Evil 4 carry case and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, we do have a case.
It takes you out of the moment. It's almost like a safe haven for the player to retreat back into when the game's getting a little bit too intense.
Mm. Whereas in Dead Space, you've got none of that business. You are always in the game. You're always 1 second away from being hunted down by a necromorph. The game literally does not let Isaac stop until that very end cutscene. You know, you are always on the move and always in danger.
Yeah, like there aren't even really many safe rooms
in the game either. There's not really a safe room per se. There's areas, obviously, where you can save the game, but to call them safe rooms in like the Resident Evil sense is not the same at all.
That's it. Like there isn't a place in the game where the enemies can't get you.
They will never relentlessly
pursue you as well, you know, through the fence. So, you know, you can run away from a group of enemies in one room and they'll follow you to another room.
Exactly. They are relentless, mate. Absolutely relentless.
So, you know, really, really cool system, I think, for having a menu. It's very intuitive and it makes it quite fun. And again, that's it. You've got those kind of those tense moments where, all right, I need to use something in my inventory, so I've got to bring my rig up really quickly, but I'm also being chased by lots and lots of nasty ghoulies. So it's not fun, but it's also really good.
It is really fun.
I do like that.
I think something to touch on also before we do finish up is obviously we said about the second game and the third game introduces Isaac again, but as an actual speaking character. Obviously, we said Isaac never spoke in the first game. In the remake, he's going to be speaking, which is going to be good because it would be really weird because obviously in 2 and 3, he's quite vocal. And it's also fantastic that the OG voice actor as well, Gunnar Wright, is coming back to reprise his role as Isaac.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about that. And you know, and that's the thing. The voice isn't the only thing that they're looking to change either. They've completely mixed up the zero gravity section.
Yeah. Yeah, they've changed that to make it more like the second one, right? And the way the second one works.
That's correct, which I think is definitely a step in the right direction, because the kind of the zero gravity system in the first one was that you would kind of like, you can jump from surface to surface, so you can like jump onto the ceiling and stuff, but you have to like do a straight jump towards the ceiling while you're in those zero G zones, whereas in the later installments, you can literally just float around. Which I felt that kind of flowed a little bit better.
I'm kind of happy they chose to use the second game's way it handled that.
Yeah.
Because the first one is a little bit hard, especially when I played through the first one again. I was like, damn, this is a little bit clunky, isn't it? They handled it in the second and third one is much better, a lot better.
Yeah. One thing I am curious to see, something I was titting around with today was the zero gravity basketball section.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
I think that's another cool little thing that I think people forget about the first Dead Space is there are some mini games kind of woven in as well, which is
it's
kind of interesting. Aboard the military ship, you've got the shooting range, which is quite cool. And again, like when you go up in levels on that as well, because there's like a leveling system on it, you can earn consumables like ammo and health and stuff like that. So it's quite worthwhile doing.
Yeah, it's definitely decent, yeah. And I guess if anything, that provides you with some respite, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the zero gravity basketball kind of relies on you jumping from pad to pad in order to build up the score modifier. So then you can throw the zero gravity basketball into the hoop. Mm. So I'm wondering whether they're just going to scrap that altogether and not include it in the new game, or whether they're going to mix it up and maybe have it so you got to fly through hoops in order to build the score modifier or something like that.
Potentially. That could be an interesting take on it. I actually do have one complaint. It's not really a massive complaint, but my only complaint that I've seen so far from the remake stuff that they've been showing off is they have changed Isaac's face in it.
Okay.
They have changed his face, and I don't think it looks too bad personally. It is different though, and to be fair, it actually just looks more like Gunnar Wright. So like what they've done is they've made it look just more like him, basically.
I actually kind of like that now, though. That a lot of games are using the likeness of the voice actors.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool because, like, again, it makes it a lot easier for them, especially when they're doing things like motion cap. They can just put the dots in the face and they can use their actual face to animate the face. Because what you got to think as well, especially in the original Dead Space, None of the necromorphs have like moving faces or anything like that. It's almost like an uncanny valley kind of thing, right? Where they just kind of motionless bodies or motionless faces, kind of lumbering towards you to kill you. So, it's got a I'm wondering whether they're, you know, they're going to go the extra mile now that they've got the horsepower behind it, you know, and actually.
Oh yeah, 100%. I reckon the Necromorphs have got a whole new lick of paint in this new game. I reckon they're going to be looking horrendously creepy.
I mean, we've already seen the lengths that they've gone to with the dismemberment now, where like, you know, you can burn like parts of the flesh off and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're kind of doing the same kind of stuff same kind of tech that Mortal Kombat used for quite a long time, in that there's layers to like character models, and underneath the layers you have the skeleton, and above that you have the muscle, and above that you have the skin, and you'll be able to dynamically chip away at those layers to expose certain parts of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. And again, it's another little touch that I think will, it just gives you that extra layer on top of an already great game. Now that they're able to, like I said, you know, add a little bit more horsepower to it, and they can do. It's going to be like a director's cut for us now, isn't it?
Almost, yeah. It almost will be, because you're going to have extra bits in it as well. They're going to link the other games into it a little bit better, those first two ones, and they're going to obviously link the anime into it better as well. So the storyline, I think, is going to be a lot more coherent. It's going to flow a lot better. And I bet they've done a lot of that with audio logs. I bet there's more audio logs in this one.
Yeah, definitely.
More audio logs, more video logs that will actually, you know, relate to it a bit better. Because to be fair, when I think about it more, I'm not really too bothered about the face change, because honestly, it makes sense, because they did model his face. They did change his face in 2 and in 3 a little bit to be more like Gunnar Wright's as well.
Yeah.
And the first one was modeled off something completely different. But the first one made sense because Eyes didn't speak. He didn't have a personality behind him, right? You never really saw his face very much in the first game anyway. If you look at how he looked in the first game to how he looked in the second and third, it's actually very different. So the fact that they've changed it, I don't think should come as a massive shock to people.
No, that's it. Like, and while Isaac is, I think we could definitely consider him to be an iconic character. His look is, it comes more from the suit than him.
Yeah, it comes from the suit he wears and how he, and yeah, his whole aesthetic of being, of dressing and literally just being this engineer, right?
Yeah, it's like Master Chief. Nobody really cares what Master Chief looks like underneath the armor, because it's the armor that's iconic, right?
Yeah.
And it's the voice, isn't it?
He only bothered to be a thing, right, when he got a voice.
Yeah.
When he got the voice in number 2 and number 3, right? That's when they started to care more about what Isaac looked like, because he actually, you know, developed a personality more and we can connect with him more. And obviously we're going to go into that in the second and third episode when we talk about the other games, how that happened, you know, and how it came about that we had a more chatty, more human Isaac, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering whether that was, maybe that was like personal feedback from the fans, maybe, that, you know, maybe we want a little bit more interaction with the character. Mm.
I think it'd be integral. It was integral to tell his story more, to be fair. Because obviously the first one ends on such a bombshell, right? It's sort of like, oh man, after all that's happened, right? We got to get Isaac's thoughts on this. Like, what the fuck is he thinking, you know? Like, what's he just been through?
Yeah, they could have done the games without him talking. But like, is there any point? Like, is, you know, unless there's a particular reason why you might as well have a voice.
I think it adds a lot, like being able to listen to him speak in the other games.
Particularly when it's a more linear story like this. If it's something like we've mentioned with Fallout, where having a voice actor limits the amount of options you have, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah, that's different. Yeah. Whereas this is you can't influence the story really in this, right? It's a linear story.
Yeah.
You have the tale. You're just experiencing it. You know.
Yeah. So from that regard, like it made sense to have a voice actor, and yeah,
100%.
Like Gunnar Wright does a fantastic job.
He does a great job of it. Yeah. I'm very happy to see that he is, that he's carrying on and he's doing it again, especially because this one is going to require all new dialogue. Cause obviously Isaac never speaks in the first one. So there's all this dialogue that they've had to put in. Right. And they've had to do everything again because he's now got to talk, isn't he? Cause he'll probably talk to, you know, other characters in the game that appear.
Yeah. I haven't looked into this, but are they looking to re-record all of the other characters' lines?
I'm pretty sure they are, because they've, like I said, how is Isaac gonna talk to people? Because they're gonna have to respond to him, aren't they? They're gonna have to respond to him and acknowledge him.
Yeah,
or so else it'd be a bit awkward.
Well, no, because I wondered whether it might just be a case that they'd use the original audio dialogue and then they would just have him respond to them. To the audio that they've already got recorded.
It actually seems like they are they're bringing in. So they've actually got here as a list. So we've obviously got Gunnar Wright obviously coming back. Nicole is being voiced by the woman who voiced her in Dead Space 2.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Tanya Clark, And she also did mocap for her as well in the second game, so she's going to be back.
Oh, excellent.
It seems like they are going down that route. So Kendra is also being voiced by someone new, and they're also using her likeness in it as well. Hammond is also being voiced by someone new. They're using his likeness as well. So, yeah, they are doubling down. So all the main characters seem to be being revoiced, and all their likenesses are being used of the actors as well.
That's excellent, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Kine, Mercer, Matthias, all of them are going to be basically new, and they're going to be given new characters, basically.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's going to work out well. I mean, we've seen, you know, kind of tales of success with doing that as well, right? With first example that jumps to mind is Resident Evil 2 Remake, right? Mm. It's great stuff. Like, I really like it. Particularly like Leon and Claire, they don't share the likeness of the voice actors.
No.
But like, say for instance, Marvin, you know, he's really good.
Leon and Claire, right? It's for those characters, it's like it's too late now to go back. You know?
Oh, totally.
Because they always have their faces, whereas in this game, it's like you could do it if you were committed to changing it. You know, you could make it. Whereas obviously they can't just change Leon's face, even though it's okay for Chris's face to change, apparently. Not okay for for Leon's face to
he gets a facelift every game, doesn't he? So.
Yeah, he does.
so Isaac should have it too.
Yeah, well, he is getting just that, my man. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our chat on the very first episode of the Dead Space series. We're going to cover all of them. We're going to cover all the games. We're going to talk about everything, aren't we?
We certainly are. Yeah, it's going to be the whole shebang. Then by the time we're done, the remake should be out.
Yeah, and we'll cover that as well.
We'll definitely cover it. I can't promise we'll cover it straight away because I don't know. Depends how soon we get it. We're still kind of knee deep in Dark Tide and some other bits and pieces at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. So, it's still busy.
We've got things on at the moment. But again, as soon as we play it, and as soon as we've got some thoughts to share, we should definitely do so.
100%. We'll be talking about that. Thank you ever so much, everyone, for listening to our first episode. We'll see you right back here next time. Do it all over again. We're going to talk about Dead Space 2.
Looking forward to it. See you all later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.